but every hair on her body was standing, and a growing reek was slithering in from the forest beyond. Like leather and carrion. Different from what she'd whiffed at the barrows. Older and earthier and hungrier. Suddenly, the fire seemed like the stupidest thing she had ever done. No fires! That had been Rowan's only rule while trekking to the fortress. And they'd stayed off the roads, veering away entirely from the forgotten, overgrown ones. Ones like the path she'd spied nearby. The silence deepened. She slipped into the drenched forest, stubbing her toes on rocks and roots as her eyes adjusted to the dark. But she kept moving ahead, curving down and away from the ancient path. She'd made it far enough that her cave was little more than a glow on the hill above, a flicker of light illuminating the trees. A god's damned beacon. She angled her stake and spear into better positions, about to continue on when lightning flashed. Three tall, lanky silhouettes lurked in front of her cave. Though they stood like humans, she knew, deep in her bones from some collective mortal memory, that they were not. They were not Fae, either. With expert quiet, she took another step, then another. They were still poking around the cave entrance, taller than men, neither male nor female. Skinwalkers are on the prowl, Rowan had warned that first day they'd trained, searching for human pelts to bring back to their caves. She had been too dazed to ask or care. But now that carelessness, that wallowing, was going to get her killed. Skinned. Wendlin, land of nightmares made flesh, where legends roamed the earth. Despite years of stealth training, every step felt like a snap, her breathing too loud. Thunder grumbled, and she used the cover of the sound to take a few bounding steps. She stopped behind another tree, breathing as quietly as she could, and peering around it to survey the hillside behind her. Lightning flashed again. The three figures were gone, but the leathery, rancid smell swarmed all around her now. Human pelts. She eyed the tree she'd ducked behind. The trunk was too slick with moss and rain to scale. The branches too high. The other trees weren't any better. And what good was being stuck up a tree in a lightning storm? She darted to the next tree, carefully avoiding any sticks or leaves, cursing silently at the slowness of her pace and, damn it all to hell. She burst into a run, the mossy earth treacherous underfoot. She could make out the trees, some larger rocks, but the slope was steep. She kept her feet under her, even as undergrowth cracked behind, faster and faster. She didn't dare take her focus off the trees and rocks as she hurtled down the slope, desperate for any flat ground. Perhaps their hunting territory ended somewhere. Perhaps she could outrun them until dawn. She veered eastward, still going downhill, and grabbed onto a trunk to swing herself around, almost losing her balance as she slammed into something hard and unyielding. She slashed with her stake, only to be grabbed by two massive hands. Her wrists sang in agony as the fingers squeezed hard enough that she couldn't stab either weapon into her captor. She twisted, bringing up a foot to smash into her assailant, and caught a flash of fangs before... not fangs. Teeth. And there was no gleam of flesh pelts. Only silver hair, shining with rain. Rowan dragged her against him, pressing them into what appeared to be a hollowed-out tree. She kept her panting quiet, but breathing didn't become any easier when Rowan gripped her by the shoulders and put his mouth to her ear. The crashing footsteps had stopped.
You are going to listen to every word I say.
Rowan's voice was softer than the rain outside.
Or else you are going to die tonight. Do you understand?
She nodded. He let go, only to draw his sword and a wicked-looking hatchet.
Your survival depends entirely on you.
The smell was growing again.
You need to shift now, or your mortal slowness will kill you.
She stiffened, but reached in, feeling for some thread of power. There was nothing. There had to be some trigger, some place inside her where she could command it. A slow, shrieking sound of stone on metal sounded through the rain. Then another, and another. They were sharpening their blades.
Your magic...
They do not breathe, so have no airways to cut off. Ice would slow them, not stop them. My wind is already blowing our scent away from them, but not for long. Shift, Aelin.
Aelin. It was not a test, not some elaborate trick. The skinwalkers did not need air. Rowan's tattoo shone as lightning filled their little hiding spot.
We are going to have to run in a moment. What form you take when we do will determine our fates. So breathe and shift.
Though every instinct screamed against it, she closed her eyes, took a breath, then another. Her lungs opened, full of cool, soothing air, and she wondered if Rowan was helping with that, too. He was helping, and he was willing to meet a horrible fate in order to keep her alive. He hadn't left her alone. She hadn't been alone. There was a muffled curse, and Rowan slammed his body against hers, as if he could somehow shield her. No, not shield her. Cover her. The flash of light. She barely registered the pain, if only because the moment her fey senses snapped into place, she had to shove a hand against her own mouth to keep from retching. Oh, gods, the festering smell of them. Worse than any corpse she'd ever dealt with. With her delicately pointed ears, she could hear them now. Each step they took as the three of them systematically made their way down the hill. They spoke in low, strange voices, at once male and female, all ravenous.
There are two of them now,
one hissed. She didn't want to know what power it wielded to allow it to speak when it had no airways.
A fey male joined the female. I want him. He smells of storm winds and steel.
Selena gagged as the smell shoved down her throat.
The female will bring back with us. Dawn's too close. Then we can take our time peeling her apart.
Rowan eased off her and said quietly, not needing to be near for her to hear while he assessed the forest beyond.
There is a swift river a third of a mile east, at the base of a large cliff.
He didn't look at her as he extended two long daggers, and she didn't nod her thanks as she silently discarded her makeshift weapons and gripped the ivory hilts.
When I say run, you run like hell. Step where I step, and don't turn around for any reason. If we are separated, run straight. You'll hear the river.
Order after order. A commander on the battlefield, solid and deadly. He peered out of the tree. The smell was nearly overpowering now, swarming from every angle.
If they catch you, you cannot kill them, not with a mortal weapon. Your best option is to fight until you can get free and run. Understand?
She gave another nod. Breathing was hard again, and the rain was now torrential.
On my mark,
Rowan said, smelling and hearing things that were lost even to her heightened senses.
Steady.
She sank onto her haunches as Rowan did the same.
Come out, come out,
one of them hissed. So close it could have been inside the tree with them. There was a sudden rustling in the brush to the west, almost as if two people were running. Instantly, The reek of the skinwalkers lessened as they raced after the cracking branches and leaves that Rowan's wind led in the other direction.
Now,
Rowan hissed, and burst out of the tree. Selena ran, or tried to. Even with her sharpened vision, the brush and stones and trees proved a hindrance. Rowan raced toward the rising roar of the river, swollen from the spring rains. His pace slower than she'd expected, but he was slowing for her. Because this fey body was different, and she was adjusting wrong, and she slipped. But a hand was at her elbow, keeping her upright.
Faster, was all he said.
And as soon as she'd found her footing, he was off again, shooting through the trees like a mountain cat. It took all of a minute before the force of that smell gnawed on her heels and the snapping of the brush closed in. But she wouldn't take her eyes off Rowan and the brightening ahead. The end of the tree line, not much farther until they could jump, and a fourth skinwalker leapt out of where it had somehow been lurking undetected in the brush. It lunged for Rowan in a flash of leathery long limbs marred with countless scars. No, not scars. Stitches. The stitches holding its various hides together. She shouted as the skinwalker pounced, but Rowan didn't falter a step as he ducked and twirled with inhuman speed, slashing down with his sword and viciously slicing with the hatchet. The skinwalker's arm severed at the same moment its head toppled off its neck. She might have marveled at the way he moved, the way he killed, but Rowan didn't stop sprinting, so Selena raced after him, glancing once at the body the Fey warrior had left in pieces, sagging bits of leather on the wet leaves, like discarded clothes, but still twitching and rustling, as if waiting for someone to stitch it back together. She ran faster, Rowan still bounding ahead. The skinwalkers closed in from behind, shrieking with rage. Then they fell silent until...
You think the river can save you?
One of them panted, letting out a laugh that raked along her bones.
You think if we get wet, we'll lose our form? I have worn the skins of fishes when mortals were scarce, female.
She had an image, then, of the chaos waiting in that river. A flipping and near drowning and dizziness, and something pulling her down, down, down to the still bottom.
Rowan!
She breathed. But he was already gone, his massive body hurtling straight off the cliff edge in a mighty leap. There was no stopping the pursuit behind her. The skinwalkers were going to jump with them, and there would be nothing they could do to kill them, no mortal weapon they could use. A well ripped open inside of her, vast and unyielding and horrible. Rowan had claimed no mortal weapon could kill them, but what of immortal ones? Selena broke through the line of trees, sprinting for the ledge that jutted out, bare granite beneath her, as she threw her strength into her legs, her lungs, her arms, and jumped. As she plummeted, she twisted to face the cliff, to face them. They were no more than three lean bodies leaping into the rainy night, shrieking with primal, triumphant, anticipated pleasure. Shift! Was the only warning she gave Rowan. There was a flash of light to tell her he'd obeyed. Then she ripped everything from that well inside her, ripped it out with both hands and her entire raging, hopeless heart. As she fell, hair whipping her face, Selena thrust her hands toward the skinwalkers.
Surprise, she hissed.
The world erupted in blue wildfire. Selena shuddered on the riverbank, from cold and exhaustion and terror. Terror at the skinwalkers, and terror at what she had done. His clothes dry thanks to shifting, Rowan stood a few feet away, monitoring the smoldering cliffs upriver. She'd incinerated the skinwalkers. They hadn't even had time to scream. She hunched over her knees, arms wrapped around herself. The forest was burning on either side of the river. a radius that she didn't have the nerve to measure. It was a weapon, her power. A different sort of weapon than blades or arrows or her hands. A curse. It took several attempts, but at last she spoke.
Can you put it out?
You could, if you tried. When she didn't respond, he said,
I'm almost done.
In a moment, the flames nearest the cliffs went out. How long had he been working to suffocate them?
We don't need something else attracted to your fires.
She might have bothered to respond to the jab, but she was too tired and cold. The rain filled the world, and for a while, silence reigned.
Why is my shifting so vital?
She asked at last.
Because it terrifies you,
he said.
Mastering it is the first step toward learning to control your power. Without that control, with a blast like that, you could easily have burnt yourself out.
What do you mean?
Another stormy look.
When you access your power, what does it feel like?
She considered. A well? She said. The magic feels like a well.
Have you felt the bottom of it?
Is there a bottom? She prayed there was.
All magic has a bottom, a breaking point. For those with weaker gifts, it's easily depleted and easily refilled. They can access most of their power at once. But for those with stronger gifts, it can take hours to hit the bottom, to summon their powers at full strength.
How long does it take you?
A full day.
She jolted.
Before battle, we take the time, so that when we walk onto the killing field, we can be at our strongest. You can do other things at the same time, but some part of you is down in there, pulling up more and more, until you reach the bottom.
And when you pull it all out, it just releases in some giant wave?
If I want it to. I can release it in smaller bursts and go on for a while. But it can be hard to hold it back. People sometimes can't tell friend from foe when they're handling that much magic.
When she'd drawn her power on the other side of the portal months ago, she'd felt that lack of control. Known she was almost as likely to hurt Kaol as she was to hurt the demon he was facing.
How long does it take you to recover?
Days. A week, depending on how I use the power and whether I drained every last drop. Some make the mistake of trying to take more before they're ready, or holding on for too long, and they either burn out their minds or just burn up altogether. Your shaking isn't just from the river, you know. It's your body's way of telling you not to do that again.
Because of the iron in our blood, pushing against the magic?
That's how our enemies will sometimes try to fight against us if they don't have magic. Iron everything.
He must have seen her brows rise, because he added,
I was captured once, while on a campaign in the east, in a kingdom that doesn't exist anymore. They had me shackled head to toe in iron to keep me from choking the air out of their lungs.
She let out a low whistle. Were you tortured?
2 weeks on their tables before my men rescued me.
He unbuckled his vambrace and pushed back the sleeve of his right arm, revealing a thick, wicked scar curving around his forearm and elbow.
Cut me open bit by bit, then took the bones here and—
I can see very well what happened, and know exactly how it's done,
she said, stomach tightening. Not at the injury, but
Sam.
Sam had been strapped to a table, cut open and broken by one of the most sadistic killers she'd ever known.
Was it you?
Rowan said quietly, but not gently.
Or someone else?
I was too late.
He didn't survive. Again, silence fell, and she cursed herself for a fool for telling him. but then she said hoarsely,
"Thank you for saving me."
A slight shrug, barely a movement at all, as if her gratitude were harder to endure than her hatred and reticence. "I am bound by an unbreakable blood oath to my queen, so I had no choice but to ensure you didn't die." A bit of that earlier heaviness settled in her veins again. "But," he went on, "I would not have left anyone to a fate at the hands of the Skinwalkers."
A warning would have been nice.
"I said they were on the loose weeks ago, but even if I'd warned you today, you would not have listened."
It was true.
She shivered again, this time so violently that her body shifted back, a flash of light and pain. If she thought she was cold in her fey body, it was nothing compared to the cold of being human again. "What was the trigger when you shifted earlier?" he asked, as if this moment were a reprieve from the real world, where the freezing storm and the surging river could muffle their words from the gods. She rubbed at her arms, desperate for any kind of warmth.
"It was nothing."
His silence demanded information for information. A fair trade. She sighed.
"Let's just say it was fear and necessity and impressively deep-rooted survival instincts."
"You didn't lose control immediately upon shifting. When you finally used your magic, your clothes didn't burn. Neither did your hair. And the daggers didn't melt."
As if just now remembering that she still had them, he swiped them from her. He was right. The magic hadn't swarmed her the moment she'd shifted, and even in the explosion that had spread out in every direction, she'd had enough control to preserve herself. Not a single hair had burned.
"Why was it different this time?" he pressed.
"Because I didn't want you to die to save me," she admitted.
"Would you have shifted to save yourself?"
"Your opinion of me is pretty much identical to my own, so you know the answer."
He was quiet for long enough that she wondered if he was piecing the bits of her together. "You're not leaving," Rowan said at last, arms crossed. "I'm not letting you off double duty in the kitchens, but you're not leaving."
"Why?"
He unfastened his cloak. "Because I said so, that's why." And she might have told him it was the worst god's damned reason she had ever heard, and that he was an arrogant prick, had he not tossed her his cloak, dry and warm. Then he dropped his jacket in her lap, too. When he turned to go back to the fortress, she followed him.
Chapter 23. For the past week, not much had changed for Manon and the Blackbeaks. They still flew daily to master the wyverns, and still managed to avoid outright war in the mess hall twice a day. The Yellowlegs' heir tried to rile Manon whenever she could, but Manon paid her no more attention than she would a gnat buzzing about her head. All that changed the day of the selection, when the heirs and their covens chose their mounts. With 3 covens plus 3 matrons, there were 42 witches crowded around the training pit in the Northern Fang. Handlers rushed about below the viewing platform, readying themselves. The wyverns would be brought out one by one, and, using the bait beasts, would show off their qualities. Like the other witches, Manon had been sneaking by the cages every day. She still wanted Titus. Wanted was a mortal word. Titus was hers. And if it came down to it, she'd disembowel any witch who challenged her. She'd sharpened her nails this morning in anticipation of it. All of the 13 had. Claims would be settled in a civilized manner, however. The 3 matrons would draw sticks if more than one claim was made on a mount. When it came to Titus, Manon knew precisely who would vie for him. Iskra and Petra, the Yellowlegs and Blueblood heirs.
She'd seen them both watching him with hungry eyes. Had Manon gotten her way, they would have fought for him in the sparring ring. She'd even suggested as much to her grandmother, but was told they didn't need to quarrel amongst themselves any more than necessary. It would be luck of the draw. That didn't sit well with Manon, who stood along the open edge of the platform, Asterin flanking her. Her edginess only sharpened as the heavy grate lifted at the back of the pit. The bait beast was already chained to the blood-stained wall, a broken, scarred wyvern, half the size of the bull's, his wings tucked in tight. From the platform, she could see that the venomous spikes in his tail had been sawn off to keep him from defending himself against the invaluable mounts. The bait beast lowered his head as the gate groaned open, and the first wyvern was paraded in on tight chains held by very pale-faced men. They darted back as soon as the beast was through, dodging that deadly tail, and the grate shut behind them. Manon loosed a breath. It wasn't Titus, but one of the medium-sized bulls. Three sentinels stepped forward to claim him, but the blue-blood matron, Cressida, held up a hand.
"Let us see him in action first."
One of the men whistled sharply. The wyvern turned on the bait beast. Teeth and scales and claws, so fast and vicious that even Manon held her breath. Chained as he was, the bait beast didn't stand a chance and was pinned within a second, massive jaws holding down his neck. One command, one whistle, and the wyvern would snap it. But the man let out a lower note whistle, and the bull backed off. Another whistle, and he sat on his haunches. Two more sentinels stepped forward, five in the running. Cressida held out a fistful of twigs to the contenders. It went to the blue blood sentinel, who grinned at the others, then down at her wyvern as it was led back into the tunnel. The bait beast, bleeding from his side, heaved himself into the shadows by the wall, waiting for the next assault. One after another, the wyverns were brought out, attacking with swift, wicked force. And one by one, the sentinels claimed them. No Titus. Not yet. She had a feeling the matrons were drawing this out as some test, to see how well their heirs could control themselves while waiting for the best mounts, to see who would hold out longest. Manon kept one eye on the beasts and another one on the other heirs, who watched her in turn as each wyvern was paraded. Yet the first truly enormous female had Petra, the blue-blood heir, stepping forward. The female was nearly Titus's size, and wound up taking a chunk out of the bait beast's flank before the trainers could get her to stop. Wild, unpredictable, lethal, magnificent. No one challenged the blue-blood heir. Petra's mother only gave her a nod, as though they had already known what mount she desired. Asterin took the fiercest stealth wyvern that came along, a cunning-eyed female. Her cousin had always been the best at scouting, and after a talk with Manon and the other sentinels that went long into the night, it had been decided that Asterin would continue that role in the 13's new duties. So when the pale blue female was presented, Asterin claimed her, her eyes promising such brutality to anyone who got in her way that they practically glowed. No one dared challenge her. Manon was watching the tunnel entrance when she smelled the myrrh and rosemary scent of the blue blood air beside her. Asterin snarled a soft warning.
"Waiting for Titus, aren't you?"
Petra murmured, eyes also on the tunnel. "And if I am?" Manon asked.
"I'd rather have you with him than Iskra."
The witch's serene face was unreadable.
"So would I."
She wasn't sure what exactly, but the conversation meant something. Clearly, seeing them quietly talking meant something to everyone else, too. Especially Iskra, who sauntered over to Manon's other side.
"Plotting already?"
The blue blood heir lifted her chin.
I think Titus would make a good mount for Manon.
A line in the sand, Manon thought. What had the blue blood matron told Petra about her? What schemes was she hatching? Iskra's mouth twisted into a half-grin.
We'll see what the three-faced mother has to say.
Manon might have said something back, but then Titus thundered out. As it had every other time, the breath went out of her at his sheer size and viciousness. The men had barely scrambled back through the gate before Titus whirled, snapping for them. They'd made only a few successful runs with him, she'd been told. Yet under the right rider, he'd fully break. Titus didn't wait for the whistle before he wheeled on the bait beast, striking with his barbed tail. The chained beast ducked with surprising swiftness, as if he'd sensed the bull's attack, and Titus's tail embedded itself in the stone. Debris rained on the bait beast, and as he cringed back, Titus struck again, and again. Chained to the wall, the bait beast could do nothing. The man whistled, but Titus kept at it. He moved with the fluid grace of untamed savagery. The bait beast yelped, and Manon could have sworn the blue blood heir flinched. She'd never heard a cry of pain from any of the wyverns, yet as Titus sank back on his haunches, she saw where he'd struck. Right atop the earlier wound in the bait beast's flank. As if Titus knew where to hit to inflict the most agony. She knew they were intelligent, but how intelligent? The man whistled again, and a whip sounded. Titus just kept pacing in front of the bait beast, contemplating how he would strike. Not out of strategy. No, he wanted to savor it. To taunt. A shiver of delight went down Manon's spine. Riding a beast like Titus, ripping apart her enemies with him. If you want him so badly, Iskra whispered, and Manon realized she was still standing beside her, now only a step away. Why don't you go get him? And before Manon could move, before anyone could, because they were all enthralled by that glorious beast. Iron claws shoved into her back. Astrin's shout echoed, but Manon was falling, plunging the 40 feet right into the stone pit. She twisted, colliding with a small, crumbling ledge jutting from the wall. It slowed her fall and saved her life, but she kept going until she slammed into the ground, her ankle wrenching. Cries came from above, but Manon didn't look up. If she had, she might have seen Astarin tackle Iskra, claws and teeth out. She might have seen her grandmother give the order that no one was to jump into the pit. But Manon wasn't looking at them. Titus turned toward her. The wyvern stood between her and the gate, where the men were rushing to and fro, as if trying to decide whether they should risk saving her or wait until she was carrion. Titus's tail lashed back and forth, his dark eyes pinned on her. Manon drew Windcleaver. It was a dagger compared to the mass of him. She had to get to that gate. She stared him down. Titus settled onto his haunches, preparing to attack. He knew where the gate was, too, and what it meant for her. His prey. Not rider or mistress, but prey. The witches had gone silent. The men at the gate and upper platforms had gone silent. Manon rotated her sword. Titus lunged. She had to roll to avoid his mouth, and was up in a second, sprinting like hell for that gate. Her ankle throbbed, and she limped, swallowing her scream of pain. Titus turned, fast as a spring stream down a mountainside, and as she hurtled for the gate, he struck with his tail. Manon had enough sense to whirl to avoid the venomous barbs, but she caught an upper edge of the tail in the side and went flying, Windcleaver wrenching from her grip. She hit the dirt near the opposite wall and slid, face scraping on the rocks. Her ribs bleated in agony as she scrambled into a sitting position and gauged the distance between herself and the sword and Titus. But Titus was hesitating. His eyes lifted behind her, above her, to... Darkness embrace her. She'd forgotten about the bait beast. The creature chained behind her, so close she could smell the carrion in his breath. Titus's stare was a command for the bait beast to stand down, to let him eat Manon. Manon dared a glance over her shoulder, to the sword in the shadows, so close to the chained anchor of the bait beast. She might have risked it if the beast wasn't there, if he wasn't looking dead at her, looking at her like she was not prey. Titus growled a territorial warning at the bait beast, again, so loud she could feel it in every bone. Instead, the bait beast, small as he was gazing at her with something like rage and determination. Emotion, she might have called it. Hunger, but not for her. No, she realized, as the beast lifted its black gaze to Titus, letting out a low snarl in response. Not submissive in the least, that sound. A threat. A promise. The bait beast wanted a shot at Titus. Allies. If only for this moment. Again, Manon felt that ebb and flow in the world, that invisible current that some called fate and some called the loom of the three-faced goddess. Titus roared his final threat. Manon twisted to her feet and ran. Every step made stars flash, and the ground shook as Titus barreled after her, willing to tear her through the bait beast to kill her if necessary. Manon scooped up her sword and whirled, bringing it down upon the thick, rusted chain with every bit of strength left in her. Wind Cleaver, they called her blade. Now they would call it Iron Cleaver. The chain snapped free as Titus leapt for her. Titus didn't see it coming, and there was something like shock in his eyes as the bait beast tackled him and they rolled. Titus was twice its size and uninjured, and Manon didn't wait to see the outcome before she took off for the tunnel, where the men were frantically lifting the grate. But then a boom and a shocked murmur sounded, and Manon dared one look, in time to see the wyverns leap apart and the bait beast strike again. The blow from that scarred, useless tail was so strong, Titus's head slammed into the dirt. As Titus surged to his legs, the bait beast fainted with its tail and made a swipe with jagged claws that had Titus roaring in pain. Manon froze, barely 15 feet from the gate. The wyverns circled each other, wings scraping against the ground. It should have been a joke. And yet the bait beast wouldn't stand down, despite the limp, despite the scars and the blood. Titus went right for the throat with no warning growl. The bait beast's tail connected with Titus's head. Titus reeled back, but then lunged, jaws and tail snapping. Once those barbs got into the flesh of the bait beast, it would be done. The bait beast dodged the tail by slamming its own down atop it, but couldn't escape the jaws that latched onto its neck. Over. It should be over. The bait beast thrashed, but couldn't get free. Manon knew she should run. Others were shouting. She had been born without sympathy or mercy or kindness. She didn't care which one of them lived or died, so long as she escaped. But that current was still flowing. Flowing toward the fight, not away from it. And she owed the bait beast a life debt. So Manon did the most foolish thing she'd ever done in her long, wicked life. She ran for Titus and brought Windcleaver down upon his tail. She severed clean through flesh and bone, and Titus roared, releasing his prey. The stump of his tail lashed at her, and Manon took it right in the stomach, the air knocked out of her before she even hit the ground. When she raised herself, she saw the final lunge that ended it. Throat exposed by his bellow of pain. Titus didn't stand a chance as the bait beast pounced and closed its jaws around that mighty neck. Titus had one last thrash, one final attempt to pry himself free. The bait beast held firm, as though he'd been waiting for weeks or months or years. He clamped down and wrenched his head away, taking Titus's throat with him. Silence fell, as if the world itself stopped when Titus's body crashed to the ground, black blood spilling everywhere. Manon stood absolutely still. Slowly, the bait beast lifted its head from the carcass, Titus's blood dripping from his maw. Their eyes met. People were shouting at her to run, and the gate groaned open. But Manon stared into those black eyes, one of them horribly scarred but intact. He took a step, then another toward her. Manon held her ground. It was impossible. Impossible. Titus was twice his size, twice his weight, and had years of training. The bait beast had trounced him. Not because he was bigger or stronger, but because he wanted it more. Titus had been a brute and a killer, yet this wyvern before her, he was a warrior. Men were rushing in with spears and swords and whips, and the bait beast growled. Manon held up a hand, and again, the world stopped. Manon, eyes still upon the beast, said, "He's mine." He had saved her life. Not by coincidence, but by choice. He'd felt the current running between them too. "What?" her grandmother barked from above. Manon found herself walking toward the wyvern and stopped with not 5 feet between them. "He's mine," Manon said, taking in the scars, the limp, the burning life in those eyes. The witch and the wyvern looked at each other for a moment that lasted for a heartbeat, that lasted for eternity. "You're mine," Manon said to him. The wyvern blinked at her, Titus's blood still dripping from his cracked and broken teeth. And Manon had the feeling that he had come to the same decision. Perhaps he had known long before tonight, and his fight with Titus hadn't been so much about survival as it had been a challenge to claim her. As his rider, as his mistress, as his. Manon named her wyvern Abraxos, after the ancient serpent who held the world between his coils at the behest of the three-faced goddess. And that was about the only pleasant thing that happened that night. When she'd returned to the others, Abraxos taken away for cleaning and mending, and Titus's carcass hauled off by 30 men, Manon had stared down each and every witch who dared meet her eyes. The Yellowleg's heir was being held by Asterin in front of the matrons. Manon gazed at Iskra for a long moment before she simply said, "Looks like I lost my footing." Iskra steamed at the ears, but Manon shrugged, wiping the dirt and blood from her face before limping back to the Omega. She wouldn't give Iskra the satisfaction of claiming she'd almost killed her, and Manon was in no shape to settle this in a proper fight. Attack or clumsiness, Asterin was punished by Mother Blackbeak that night for letting the heir fall into the pit. Manon had asked to be the one to dispense the whipping, but her grandmother ignored her. Instead, she had the Yellowleg's heir do it. As Asterin's failure had occurred in plain sight of the other matrons and their heirs, so would her punishment. Standing in the mess hall, Manon watched each brutal lash, all 10 of them at full strength, as Iskra sported a bruise on her jaw, courtesy of Asterin. To her everlasting credit, Asterin didn't scream. Not once. It still took all of Manon's self-restraint to keep from grabbing the whip and using it to strangle Iskra. Then came the conversation with her grandmother. It wasn't so much a conversation as it was a slap in the face, then a verbal beating that, a day later, still made Manon's ears ring. She'd humiliated her grandmother and every Blackbeak in history by picking that runty scrap of meat, regardless of his victory. It was a fluke that he'd killed Titus, her grandmother ranted. Abraxos was the smallest of any of the mounts, and on top of that, because of his size, he had never flown a day in his life. They had never let him out of the Warrens. They didn't even know if he could fly after his wings had taken a beating for so long. And the handlers were of the opinion that should Abraxos attempt the crossing, he'd splatter himself and Manon on the gap floor. They claimed no other wyverns would ever accept his dominance, not as wing leader. Manon had ruined all of her grandmother's plans. All these facts were shouted at her again and again. She knew that even if she wanted to change mounts, her grandmother would force her to keep Abraxos, just to humiliate her when she failed. Even if it got her killed in the process. Her grandmother hadn't been in the pit, though. She hadn't looked into Abraxos's eyes and seen the warrior's heart beating in him. She hadn't noticed that he'd fought with more cunning and ferocity than any of the others. So Manon held firm and took the slap to the face, and the lecture, and then the second slap that left her cheek throbbing. Manon's face was still aching when she reached the pen in which Abraxos now made his home. He was curled by the far wall, silent and still, when so many of the creatures were pacing or shrieking or growling. Her escort, the overseer, peered through the bars. Asterin lurked in the shadows. After the whipping last night, her second wasn't going to let her out of her sight any time soon. Manon hadn't apologized for the whipping. The rules were the rules, and her cousin had failed. Asterin deserved the lashing, just as Manon deserved the bruise on her cheek. "Why's he curled up like that?" Manon asked the man.
"Suspect it's 'cause he's never had a pen to himself. Not this big, anyway."
Manon studied the penned-in cavern.
"Where did they keep him before?"
The man pointed at the floor.
"With the other baiters in the sty. He's the oldest of the baiters, you know. Survived the pits and the styes. But that doesn't mean he's suitable for you."
"If I wanted your opinion on his suitability, I'd ask for it," Manon said,
eyes still on Abraxos as she approached the bars.
"How long to get him in the skies?"
The man rubbed his head.
"Could be days or weeks or months. Could be never.
We begin training with our mounts this afternoon."
"Not going to happen."
Manon raised her brows.
"This one needs to be trained alone first. I'll get our best trainers on it, and you can use another wyvern in the meantime to..."
"First of all, human," Manon interrupted.
"Don't give me orders."
Her iron teeth snapped out, and he flinched.
"Second, I won't be training with another wyvern. I'll train with him."
The man was pale as death as he said,
"All your sentinels' mounts will attack him, and the first flight will spook him so bad that he'll fight back. So, unless you want your soldiers and their mounts to tear each other apart, I suggest you train alone."
He trembled and added,
"M'lady."
The wyvern was watching them. Waiting.
"Can they understand us?"
"No. Some spoken commands and whistles, but no more than a dog."
Manon didn't believe that for one moment. It wasn't that he was lying to her. He just didn't know any better. Or maybe Abraxos was different. She'd use every moment until the war games to train him. When she and her 13 were crowned victors, she'd make each and every one of the witches who doubted her, her grandmother included, curse themselves for fools. Because she was Manon Blackbeak, and she'd never failed at anything. And there would be nothing better than watching Abraxos bite off Iskra's head on the battlefield. Chapter 24. It was far too easy to lie to his men about the bruises and cuts on his face when Kaol returned to the castle. An unfortunate incident with a drunk vagrant in Rifthold. Enduring the lies and the injuries was better than being carrion. Kaol's bargain with Adian and the rebels had been simple. Information for information. He'd promised more information about their queen, as well as about the king's black rings, in exchange for what they knew regarding the king's power. It had kept him alive that night, and every night afterward, when he'd waited for them to change their minds. But they never came for him. And tonight, he and Adian waited until well past 12 before slipping into Selena's old rooms. It was the first time he'd dared return to the tomb since that night with Selena and Dorian, and the skull-shaped bronze knocker, Mort, didn't move or speak at all. Even though Kaol wore the Eye of Elena at his throat, the knocker remained frozen. Perhaps Mort only answered to those with Brannon Galathinius's blood in their veins. So he and Adian combed through the tomb, the dusty halls, scouring every inch for signs of spies or ways to be discovered. When they were at last satisfied that no one could overhear them, Adian said, "Tell me what I'm doing down here, Captain." The general had shown no awe or surprise as Kaol had led him into Elena and Gavin's resting place, though his eyes had widened slightly at Damaris. But whether or not Adian knew what it was, he'd said nothing. For all his brashness and arrogance, Kaol had a feeling the man had many, many secrets, and was damn good at concealing them. It was the other reason why he'd offered the bargain to Adian and his companions. If the prince's gifts were discovered, Dorian would need somewhere to hide, and someone to get him to safety if Kaol were incapacitated. Kaol said,
"Are you prepared to share whatever information you've gathered from your allies?"
Adian gave him a lazy grin.
"So long as you share yours."
Kaol prayed to any god that would listen that he wasn't making the wrong move, as he pulled the Eye of Elena from his tunic.
"Your queen gave this necklace to me when she left for Wendland. It belonged to her ancestor, who summoned her here to give it to her."
Adian's eyes narrowed as he took in the amulet, the blue stone shimmering in the moonlight.
"What I am about to tell you," Kaol said, "changes everything."
Dorian stood in the shadows of the stairwell, listening. Listening, and not quite wanting to accept that Kaol was in the tomb with Adian Ashriver. That had been the first shock. For the past week, he'd been creeping down here to hunt for answers after his explosion with Sorsha. Especially now that she had lied through her teeth and risked everything to keep his secret, and to help him find a way to control it. Tonight he'd been horrified to find the secret door left slightly ajar. He shouldn't have come, but he'd done it anyway, making up an easy list of lies to tell should he find an unfriendly face down here. Then he'd gotten close enough to hear the two male voices and almost fled. Almost, until he'd realized who was talking. It was impossible, because they hated each other. Yet there they were in Elena's tomb. Allies. It was enough. Too much. But then he'd heard it. Heard what Kaol said to the general. So quietly it was barely audible.
"Your queen gave this necklace to me when she left for Wendwin."
It was a mistake. It had to be a mistake, because his chest had become too tight, too small.
You will always be my enemy.
That's what Selena had screamed at Kaol the night Nehemia died. And she'd said that she'd lost people 10 years ago, but... Dorian couldn't move, as Kaol launched into another story, another truth, about Dorian's own father, about the power the king wielded. Selena had discovered it. Selena was trying to find a way to destroy it. His father had made that thing they'd fought in the library catacombs. That monstrous thing that had seemed human. Word keys. Word gates. Word stone. They had lied to him, too. They had decided he wasn't to be trusted. Selena and Kaol, they'd decided against him. Kaol had known who and what Selena truly was. It was why he'd sent her to Wendlin. Why he'd gotten her out of the castle. Dorian was still frozen on the stairs when Adian slipped out of the tomb, sword out, and looking ready to attack whatever enemy he'd detected. Spotting him, Adian swore, low and viciously, his eyes bright in the glow of his torch. Selena's eyes. Aelin Ashriver. Ashriver. Galathinius's eyes. Adian was her cousin, and he was still loyal to her, lying through his teeth, through every action, about where his allegiance lay. Kaol rushed into the hall, a hand lifted beseechingly.
Dorian.
For a moment, he could only stare at his friend. Then he managed to say,
Why?
Kaol loosed a breath.
Because the fewer people who know, the safer. For her. For everyone. For you. They have information that might help you. You think I'd run to my father?
The words were barely more than a strangled whisper, as the temperature plummeted. Kaol stepped forward, putting himself between Adian and Dorian, his palms exposed, placating.
I can't afford to guess, to hope, even with you. How long?
Ice coated his teeth, his tongue.
She told me about your father before she left. I figured out who she is soon afterward. And you're working with him now?
The captain's breath clouded in front of him.
If we can find a way to free magic, it could save you. They think they might have some answers about what happened and how to reverse it. But if Adian and his allies are caught, if she is caught, they will die. Your father will put them all down, starting with her. And right now, Dorian, we need them.
Dorian turned to Adian.
Are you going to kill my father?
Does he not deserve to die? Was the general's reply.
Dorian could see the captain wincing, not at the general's words, but at the cold.
Did you tell him about me?
Dorian ground out.
No, Adian answered for Kaol. Though if you don't learn to control yourself, there soon won't be a soul in the realm who doesn't know you have magic.
Adian slid those heirloom eyes to the captain.
So that's why you were so desperate to trade secrets. You wanted the information for his sake.
A nod from Kaol. Adian smirked at Dorian, and ice coated the stairwell.
Does your magic manifest in ice and snow, then, princeling?
The general asked. Come closer and find out, Dorian said with a faint smile. Perhaps he could throw Adian across the hall, just as he had with that creature.
Adian can be trusted, Dorian,
Kaol said.
He's as two-faced as they come. I don't believe for one heartbeat that he wouldn't sell us out if it meant furthering his own cause. He won't,
Kaol snapped. cutting off Adian's reply. Kaol's lips went blue from the cold.